Hello and welcome to Indie Author Answers, a podcast about self-publishing, writing, editing, marketing, social media, and all that sort of stuff for indie authors. I'm your host, Jim Heskett, and each week we'll explore the landscape of the publishing industry, and I can promise you I'll go off topic. On this podcast, I will, live on the air, edit my trunk novel, The Problematic Virtue, one chapter at a time. We're going to talk about what worked, what didn't work, what I could have done better, and what lessons I learned from writing it. You can follow along from the first chapter at jimheskett.com/beginning. Hello everyone out there in podcast land. I'm Jim, you're the listener, and this is Indie Author Answers. So let's get right to it. Just a little bit off topic at first. Now, this is going to come out a few weeks after, but I'm recording this the day after the Oscars, and I was pretty stoked that Birdman won. I used to write movie reviews for aboutboulder.com, and so I saw all of the prestige movies that came out last year, and Birdman was definitely my favorite, so pretty happy about that. Jake Gyllenhaal should have definitely been nominated for Nightcrawler, because he was fantastic in that movie. So this is Indie Author Answers, and let's talk about writing and stuff, because that's what we do here. First up, for our tip of the week, I want to talk about permafree and funnels. I've mentioned this briefly before, so I want to talk about permafree as a strategy and how you do it and how it can benefit you. as an indie author, you have control over pricing for your books for the most part. You do with Kindle and with other platforms, not as much with things like, if you use ACX for audiobooks, you can't control your pricing there. And if you use CreateSpace for paperbacks, you have kind of control of your price, but Amazon seems to change the price of paperback willy-nilly. But supposedly you get the same royalty even if they change the price. Anyway, so permafree, right? Let's talk about that. So permafree is a strategy of taking a book, particularly if you have a series of books, and making the first book in that series free. And the idea being that readers who don't know you will take a chance on your work, will snap up a book if it's free, and then they'll like the book. If it's the first in the series, they'll go on to read the rest of the books in your series. so I've done permafree with two books. The first is the first book in my Five Sons saga. Five Sons of Treason is permafree on Amazon. And I also have another book that's permafree. That's my poetry book called Love Poems, Hate Poems. And that one isn't part of a funnel. The funnel being the first free book to lead people on to the rest of the books in the series. But it's just permafree because I'm mostly using it as a lead magnet to try to get people onto my mailing list, and I don't intend to go on and write other poetry books. It was just something I kind of threw up on Amazon a couple years ago to see what self-publishing was like before I, you know, was trying to test the waters. So that book's permafree because I don't expect, you know, it was only 99 cents before. It was only about 50 pages long, and I don't expect to sell tons of copies. So I thought might as well, you know, not just give it away for free to try to get people, to lead people into my other books or maybe onto my mailing list mainly. So how to do permafree. So the main way that you do this, the easiest way to do this is through Smashwords. I don't personally use Smashwords because I don't like that they require you to put all that Smashwords copyright material in your front matter. I like to own my copyright material and put in whatever I want. But if you're looking for the easy way, Smashwords is certainly the best way to do it. The way I do it is that I upload a book to Amazon, and I upload that same book to other platforms. What I did for Five Sons of Treason, I uploaded it to Google Play and to Kobo. and then Google Play and Kobo will allow you to price a book for free on their platform. Amazon does not allow you to upload a free book. The cheapest you can go there is 99 cents. So what you do is through Smashwords, or there's other platforms I understand, like Direct2Digital is one that I've heard of, and there may be others. But so you upload your book to these platforms for free, and you upload it to Amazon for 99 cents, And this is important. When you do this on Amazon, you cannot put your book in KDP Select, because KDP Select requires that you not publish your book anywhere else in the world, on no other platforms, not even on your own website. You can't give the book away for free on your website if you're in KDP Select. So you do not select KDP Select. Publish to Amazon for 99 cents, to other platforms for free, and then after that, if you go onto Amazon on your book page and you scroll down a little bit, I think it's just above where the reviews are, there's a link that says tell us about a lower price. You can click on that and get all your friends to do it too, to click on that and then include the link of where your book is on Kobo or Google Play or Smashwords, that it's free. And then the idea is that Amazon will price match that within a few days. It's been my experience that that is a crappy way to go about it, because Amazon may or may not do it, and it might take them weeks and weeks. What I've always done is, after I've had it on those other platforms and then put it on Amazon, I will just go into KDP support and go into send support an email through their little web form, and just tell them where I found the book for free. And doing it that way, they will price match it within about a day. Then the first time I did it, they sent me an email and said, hey, you know, you're supposed to do this by going to the page, but whatever, they did it anyway, so I don't really care. And that is our tip of the week. So if you do a perma-free book, it will ideally lead people into your other books. I just did a promo for Five Sons of Treason. I used Kindle Nation Daily. It cost me, well, it didn't cost me very much, but it also got me free promos on Book Gorilla, and there were a couple of other sites that just, I guess, steal from whatever Kindle Nation Daily puts up as a free book, because I got accidental promos from like three other sites that were like, hey, here's some free books to check out today. And I had 5,000 downloads a day of my book, which is pretty awesome. It jumped up into the top 100 free on Amazon. And so this just happened like yesterday, so I haven't seen it translate into sales yet. But hopefully that should translate into sales of the rest of the books of the series and make it worth my money. And one other thing that I will say about perma-free is, I've known a lot of authors who have a hard time with the concept of giving away their work for free. And I know that like the self-publishing podcast guys have talked about this, and that it's that you have to divorce yourself from the idea of your work as your babies. Once you've written a book and put it out there in the world, it's not your art, it's a product. And so you have to treat it as a product, and sometimes you have to give away a product for free to get people interested in your other products. So giving away something via perma-free is a great way to get people interested in your other work. Cool. Well, that's enough of my rambling, so let's get on and read Chapter 12 in The Problematic Virtue, which is Brian's POV. We've been talking about this for weeks and weeks that it's coming, and I know you guys are super stoked that we're finally going to read about Brian's conversation with Wiles at the party. I know it feels like forever since we've been trying to get to this point. So I'm going to start reading, okay? Okay. Chapter 12, Brian. Brian learned late Wednesday night that Miguel had left the bridge unharmed. He learned from a friend, because Miguel had not returned Brian's phone call the last 2 days and seemed to give him the cold shoulder in the living room. The last time Brian had seen Miguel, there had been several guns pointed at his head. When his friend strutted through the front door with a bag of ice in each hand, a wave of relief had washed over Brian. Now he just had to deal with Wiles. This will be much less pleasant. Brian entered, then a few minutes later, Wiles followed into Maria's bedroom, and Wiles sat on the bed while Brian took a seat at a rickety chair in front of an antique desk. The pastel bedspread highlighted the shadowiness of Wiles' attire. Maria's not here, right? Brian said. Hell no. You think Miguel will throw a kegger with her in town? She's visiting family somewhere. That's good. I mean, it's a little weird being in her room, so it's good that she's not here with all this chaos. And speaking of chaos, what was all that with Tyson out there? Brian said. I thought you two were cool. Wiles turned his palms upwards as if he knew nothing about it. I guess so. I mean, we used to kick it a bit. Tyson was up on the hill last weekend and his car got rear-ended like a hit-and-run, and he acts like I did it. Did you? Brian said. The question had slipped out, and Brian immediately regretted asking. Wiles elected not to answer. He flung a canvas messenger bag onto the bed and unbuckled the lid. Right here is that evergreen shit I was telling you about, he said. He beckoned, and Brian joined Wiles on the bed, the bag between them. You're gonna love it. I sampled some yesterday. It's like that creeper we had last year. You know, mellow at first, heady, and then it comes on strong. It's some gourmet shit. Brian struggled to invent a deflection. Maybe today was the day to bring up his exit strategy. I don't know about that, Derek. I still have about a QP of that other stuff to get rid of. I know I've had it forever. It's just taken me longer than I thought it would take. I'm not worried about that, Wiles said as he handed Brian a large Ziploc bag of bright green pot. I know you'll take care of it. This is some level 2 shit right here. Everybody's going to want some of this, so don't worry so much about the swag weed. I need you to move this stuff right here by the end of next week. Brian marveled at the vast amount of pot before him. The spongy fillings pushed the limits of the baggie. Holy crap, Wiles, this is enormous. This has to be at least a pound. How am I supposed to sell all that in a week? Wiles, still holding the bag, gripped it a little tighter. His lips pursed. Brian's apprehension seemed to upset him. Maintaining a steely gaze with Brian, Wiles said, It's a half a key, so it's just over a pound. Things are going to be complicated with Ray in them now, so I have to scramble a bit. I'm not so sure about this stuff anymore. You're not sure? After what just happened, I thought you'd be ready and willing to step up and help me out, don't you think? Brian lowered his head, unable to meet Wiles' cold eyes. Brian had thought it better to face this conversation than to run, but that did not lessen the distastefulness of the moment. I know you're right. I know we need to talk about what happened at the bridge. I don't know exactly what to do, but I know I need to make it right. I've been thinking about it, and I have some ideas. Wiles cut him off. Stop it. I don't want excuses or some line of bullshit like I'm a girl you're trying to bang, he said, his tone calm. I don't want you to worry about it. What's done is done. I'm ready just to let it go and move on. Brian stared at him, unclear what meaning to take. Wiles' last two statements seemed contradictory. Maybe he was looking a gift horse in the mouth, but he could not help but ask, What do you mean? It was my fault. I'm the one who messed it all up. How can you just let it go? There is one thing. Brian swallowed hard, readying himself for Wiles' punishment. Just tell me, Wiles said. Why did you ask Miguel to come with you? I was nervous. I don't like going to meet people I don't know when I don't know the reason why. The reason why was that I asked you to go there. Brian ducked his head again like a shamed animal and focused on the bedspread because he had no idea how to respond to Wiles' last statement. Brian traced his fingers along the quilted stitching. He wanted to ask Wiles why Ray blew up over nothing. He wanted to ask why Wiles sent him there to meet with someone so unstable. However, Brian said nothing. Forget about it, Wiles said and laid the bag of weed on the bed. The buds were enormous and cylindrical like hydroponically grown weed. Skunky. Top quality stuff and rare around Boulder. Did I ever tell you about my dad? My real one, the cop, not my douchebag stepdad? I don't know, Brian said. I guess. I mean, not really. You mentioned him before. I know you have one, but you never actually told me anything about him. Well, I told you that he was a cop. My old man was usually too busy getting drunk and beating my ass to tell me much of anything about anything, but not long before he died, he told me about his partner. His partner and him had been together for a bunch of years, right? He said he trusted this guy with his life. He trusted the guy to take a bullet for him or run into a burning building for him, but at the same time, Wiles let the words simmer before delivering the grand finale. He wouldn't leave him alone in a room with my mom. Brian was not dumb. He knew the story had a lesson for him, but the message eluded him. Brian downed a swig from his cup of beer to break the tension. He kept his eyes steady on the bedspread, waiting for Wiles to continue. You've always done right by me before, Wiles said, and I won't forget that. Peaks and valleys. It's all good because everything evens out eventually. Brian murmured in agreement, confused. He had expected, at the very least, to spend several minutes showering Wiles with apologies. He had also prepared himself for a baseball bat to the head, which was not out of the realm of possibility. Wiles thrust the baggie towards Brian. can you do this for me? Wiles's tone was still composed, but with an edge that precluded any further discussion over the matter. A persistent mantra echoed through Brian's thoughts. Tell him. Do it. Do it. Do it now. I can't, Brian said. Excuse me? Brian's pulse quickened. No, Derek, I can't do this. This isn't what I signed up for, all this gangster stuff. I had a gun pointed in my face, and I don't ever want to experience anything like that again. I don't want to let you down, but I'm not cut out for all this serious stuff. I need to focus on what's best for me right now, and that's trying to get my grades up. I'm really sorry. Stop apologizing, Wiles said. He narrowed his eyes, but then laughed. I never had anybody try to quit on me before. I don't even know what to say to you. Brian focused on taking slow, even breaths. He visualized this conversation concluding with the result that he wanted. I got hooked up with this guy, a guy who owns a recording studio in town. I'm going to start doing some work for him, you know, playing guitar and stuff for bands in the studio. Part-time stuff, but the money's good. I can make the same money I'm making now, but it's only a few hours a week. Who is this guy? Wiles said. Brian tried to look Wiles in the eyes. His name is Kevin Warner. He owns the 28th Street Studios. Wiles flicked a thumb back and forth across his chin. No. What do you mean? I mean no. You can go play guitar all you want, but you can't stop working for me. You're too good, and you owe me. After what just happened the other day, you owe me, and you know it. Wiles stuffed the weed into his bag and held it out to Brian. Brian tried to think of a better argument, something that would change Wiles' mind. Before he could, the room flooded with shadows of red and blue lights, and then a yelp from a police siren. I was wondering when the cops were going to show up, Wiles said. I told them to keep that motherfucking music down. They bolted through the door out into the living room as the multitudes of underage drinkers and weed smokers stampeded towards the back door. A chubby kid in front of Brian, who ran while he desperately clung to a few bottles of beer, let one slip and it cracked on the floor. Brian leapt over the mess and he exited the house just as Alex and Heather climbed the back fence to freedom. All right, kids, so let's talk about what we read, shall we? Chapter 12, Brian. So the first thing that happens in this chapter is that Brian says that he learned, or he thinks, or at least there's narration that says that he learned late Wednesday night that Miguel had left the bridge unharmed. So if you remember a couple weeks ago, we were talking about when in Miguel's POV, when he comes in and Brian sees him and Brian looks relieved, and it's implied that Brian has not spoken to Miguel since the events at the bridge. And now here we learn that Brian learned late Wednesday night that Miguel left the bridge unharmed, which this seems kind of strange. It seems like we should have known this already because chapters have gone by and Brian and Miguel are friends, but we don't know that Brian knows that Miguel didn't die there at the bridge. So this bit of exposition should have come earlier because now the reader is confused that we're learning this so late. You know, this is like 30 pages later that the reader is learning that Miguel was okay. And then we get more exposition. He learned this from a friend because Miguel had not returned Brian's phone calls for the last 2 days and seemed to give him the cold shoulder in the living room. Now, the reason why Miguel hasn't returned Brian's phone calls is going to come into play later, much, much later. It's like the final big plot twist of the book near the very end of the book. So this is important, but the reader is going to have to remember this for a very long time. The reader probably isn't going to remember this 250 pages later. So the last time Brian had seen Miguel, there had been several guns pointed at his head. When his friend strutted through the front door with a bag of ice in each hand, a wave of relief had washed over Brian. A wave of relief washing over somebody has been used so much, it's kind of a cliche. There's like a new generation of cliches that get used so much, like a furrowed brow when you want to show someone being doubtful or concerned. A furrowed brow, that's something that's... I try not to use that if I can. So now we know that Brian is going to have to go finally talk to Wiles, which we've been building up to for a long time. And let me talk for just a second. Let me take a time out here for just a second and talk about the inciting incident. So The Problematic Virtue began its life as a screenplay. And like I've mentioned before, it's sort of quasi, not really, but a little bit autobiographical. And what we have here is this character of Brian. In the screenplay, in a later draft of the screenplay, I realized that Brian didn't really have a through line. He didn't really have anything to make him... He didn't really have a desire. He didn't. There wasn't really an inciting incident that pushed him forward to pursue something. And so sort of at the last minute, I included this thing that Brian, that his goal was to get through college, that it was something cheesy like he wanted to be the first person in his family to graduate from college. And so I included some scenes in the screenplay of him, you know, just like studying at the library. So you could say, oh, wow, he's trying to be all studious and crap. But so I tried to include that in this in the novel, but it sort of gets pushed to the wayside because what we have is Brian essentially reacting to a series of things that happened to him. Now, I know in thrillers, which I guess you could call this a thriller, for the most part, your antagonist drives the plot. But you can't have your protagonist merely reacting to everything the antagonist does. When that happens, what you have is a limp sock protagonist. And readers can't get behind a limp sock. Readers can't get behind a protagonist who doesn't take action, doesn't take initiative, doesn't seek out ways to defeat the antagonist. And so that's what we have here, because Brian's desire, which is to finish school, doesn't really seem to have anything to do with what the antagonist is doing. And now we're like 60, 70 pages into the book, maybe not that much, maybe it's only like 50. Reading a chapter a week, it's kind of hard to get a sense of place where we are in the book, but we're still in the first quarter. Because we finally get to see what the antagonist, Wiles, what his part in this is in this chapter, and we'll get to that in just a minute. So let's get back into it. So they go into Maria's room, and whether or not the reader remembers who Maria is, we don't know. Maybe, maybe not. So then there's this line, you think Miguel would throw a kegger with her in town? She's visiting family somewhere. So we know that Miguel and Maria live together, and then the reader would probably remember that they're brother and sister. So then they recap what happened with Tyson, and Wiles is like, I don't know, his car got hit, he thinks I did it. And then we had this line where Brian says, did you? The question had slipped out, and Brian immediately regretted asking. So here we see Brian get a little bit of backbone, because he's not totally terrified of Wiles, because he'll question him. But it's not quite enough. So then Wiles brings out the da-da-da-da, he brings out the weed, and then we have all of this weed slang that's meant to show that Wiles knows what he's talking about. He mentions Evergreen, he mentions Creeper, Mellow, Heady. So then we get a little bit, we get sort of a hint about what Brian wants. Brian struggled to invent a deflection. Maybe today was the day to bring up his exit strategy. So what we're implying here is that Brian's want is to get away from Wiles. But the problem is that this, his desire to get away from Wiles, doesn't carry through the rest of the novel. It's not his driving force that moves the protagonist's actions to get from the beginning of his arc to the end of his arc. I mean, Brian's arc ends up being, his emotional arc, his internal arc ends up being that he learns to stand up for himself by the end of the book, the fact that he doesn't stand up for himself is another thing that kind of makes him a limp sock. You know, writing characters that have an arc to go from weak to strong, you know, where they're just, they start out as a doormat and then they end up as an alpha, it's really hard to pull that off. You have to give the character some really great qualities to make the reader still root for him if he's just a weakling. I don't mean physical weakling. I mean, like, if he's won't stand up for himself. Readers have a hard time getting behind a character like that unless he's really sympathetic, and maybe he's, you know, like Harry Potter is a good example, in that he starts out as a weakling, you know, but Harry Potter's picked on so ruthlessly by his family, we can't help but feel for Harry and root for him to win, you know, at the beginning of the first book.
know, the first book.
And so I just want to point out one little thing here. While still holding the bag, gripped it a little tighter, his lips pursed. Brian's apprehension seemed to upset him. Maintaining a steely gaze with Brian, Wiles said, "So we have here, as we have some show, and then we have some unnecessary tell in the middle. The Brian's apprehension seemed to upset him is really an unnecessary tell right there, because Wiles is gripping the bag, his lips are pursed, and he maintains a steely gaze. So we know that Wiles is upset right there. So the apprehension upsetting him is totally not necessary. It's just a bit of overriding that could be cut out. So then Brian is trying to stand up for himself. He says, "I'm not so sure about this anymore." And then there's a reference to after what happened, after what just happened, which the word just is one of my sins. I don't know why when I'm writing I include the word, I write it. It's just one of those words that slips out that doesn't add anything. Just, and I now when I'm writing, I usually have to do a search and replace at the end. I search for every instance of just and have to ask myself, does this just need to be here or can I take it out? Because the line is, "You're not sure? After what just happened, I thought you'd be ready and willing to help me out." But it could be, "You're not sure? After what happened, I thought you'd be ready and willing to help me out." The just doesn't add anything. So Brian lowers his head, because Brian's still a weakling. And Brian wanted, the line is, "Brian had thought it better to face this conversation than to run, but that did not lessen the distastefulness of the moment." There's a bit of very distant POV, which we've talked about several times before. But it doesn't help us get into Brian's head when there's such a rigid description of Brian's feelings there. So then Brian says, "I know we need to talk about what happened at the bridge." The reader still doesn't know what happened at the bridge. As far as the reader is concerned, Brian was there, Ray pulled a gun, Miguel showed up, and then Brian left. So we don't know what happened at the bridge. And all my beta readers were horribly confused at this point, going, "What the fuck happened at the bridge? They keep talking about it, and I don't know what happened there." And the sad thing is, you're not going to find out what really happened at the bridge until the very end of the book. So you're going to have to stay tuned for like another 9 months of this podcast before you find out what happened. Dun, 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 suspense. Okay. So then Wiles is like, "I don't want your bullshit. Like, I'm a girl you're trying to bang. What's done is done." So Wiles seems to say that what happened, first Wiles is angry about the bridge, and then he's not angry about the bridge. So Brian's confused, and Brian's like, "What do you mean? I messed it up. How can you let it go?" So we don't know what Brian messed up. And then, so Wiles wants to know why Brian asked Miguel to come with him. And then Wiles says, "You know, I asked you to go there. You shouldn't have to bring anyone else with you." Brian ducks his head again. He traces his fingers along the quilted stitching. He wanted to ask Wiles why Ray blew up over nothing, which implies that Brian thinks that Wiles knew or knows why Ray blew up over nothing or sent him to meet someone so unstable. However, Brian said nothing because he's a limp sock. So then Wiles says, "Forget about it," and they talk about how the buds are enormous and cylindrical, like hydroponically grown weed, skunky, top-quality stuff. And then Wiles goes on this little side tangent about his dad. And now, this story about the dad, this story was actually in real life told to me by a friend of mine. And I've cautioned before about being autobiographical in your work. And I think this story could have worked because here, let me read it again real quick. "My old man was usually..." Okay, so his dad was a cop. "My old man was usually too busy getting drunk and beating my ass to tell me much of anything about anything, but not long before he died, he told me about his partner. His partner and him had been together for a bunch of years, right? He said he trusted this guy with his life. He trusted the guy to take a bullet for him or run into a burning building for him, but at the same time, he wouldn't leave him alone in a room with my mom." Now, if you remember from before, you might actually notice that I left out a line there. It actually says, "Run into a burning building for him, but at the same time, ... Wiles let the words simmer before delivering the grand finale. He wouldn't leave him alone in a room with my mom." Now, when I read it and I left that line out, it's a lot more powerful because we get straight to the punchline of the story. With that extra line in there, it kind of kills the building suspense of the story, because you know the story's going somewhere. He was a cop, he was beating his ass, he had this partner, and then he trusted him to take a bullet for him, but he didn't trust him around his wife. And so what Wiles is trying to say here with the story about his dad is that there's different kinds of loyalty, there's different kinds of trust. You can trust someone completely in some areas and not in others. And so Brian doesn't really get the story. He knows there's a lesson there, but he doesn't get it. He just knows that the story freaks him out. So then Wiles says, "You've always done right by me before, and I won't forget that, peaks and valleys." So I think I've mentioned before that this whole story, the theme of the story is kind of about loyalty and how different people view it differently. And Wiles essentially views loyalty by what people can do for him. And the story with his dad, the cop, kind of points that out, that he'll trust Brian to sell weed for him, but if he wants to leave, then it's not good. So then Brian says, "I can't, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to sell this weed, the gangster stuff, the gun pointed in my face. I don't want to experience anything like that." So we know Brian's kind of a normal guy. He's not a gangbanger. Having a gun pointed in his face is not cool with him. And then Brian makes a reference to what he thinks is his goal for the story, and that's to get his grades up. And then Wiles is like, "I never had anybody try to quit on me before." And then there's this side tangent where Brian's like, "I have this job. I'm going to go be a studio guitarist." And then Wiles wants to know who it is. And then Brian tells him, and I don't know why Brian tells him, because the reader can tell because of who Wiles is that Wiles is going to like go beat the shit out of this guy or something. So Brian tells him Kevin Werner in the 28th Street. He even tells him where he is. And then Wiles just says, "No, you can't stop selling weed for me." And this is kind of, I mean, I don't know if your average non-drug dealing reader is going to buy this, that the dealer's like, "No, you're too good at selling weed, so you can't stop." I mean, I think in real life, Wiles would just be like, "Well, fuck you then. You don't want to sell weed for me? Get the fuck out of my face." But I guess apparently Brian is such a weed-slinging virtuoso that Wiles just will not let him go. Then Brian's like, "Oh, okay, I'll keep selling the weed for you," because Brian won't stand up for himself. And then the room floods with the shadow of red and blue lights, which, you remember, 2 weeks ago in an Alex POV, he was chatting with Heather outside. The cops came, and they jumped over the back fence. So now we know that we're back in time a little bit, because Brian and Wiles are running out for the back door, and they see Alex and Heather climbing the back fence to freedom. So that is it for this chapter. I think we talked a bit about inciting incidents. We talked a bit about through lines and character desires. Your characters need to have desires, when usually those desires are based on the inciting incident. You know, in the superhero mythology, it's always that you have a mild-mannered or a regular person who gets thrust into a situation, and an inciting incident spurs that desire. Kind of, sometimes. I guess I shouldn't say it's always like that, but your characters need to want things, and you need to have an inciting incident that propels them, puts conflict, and the inciting incident puts conflict in front of their face. So you could say that there are several inciting incidents here. The inciting incident could be that Alex and Brian meet, that the inciting incident could be that Wiles sends Brian to go meet with Ray. It could have been what happened at the bridge. It could be when Alex and Wiles meet. It could be this conversation right here, sitting on Maria's bed, where Brian says, "I'm not going to sell weed," and Wiles says, "No, you have to." And you can, I should put a caveat in there, you can have more than one inciting incident. And in a story like this with all these multiple POVs, you can have an inciting incident for each character, or you can have inciting incidents for some characters. But the thing is, it's hard for the reader to track, here's where the story is starting. Here's where Brian is launching on his quest to pursue his desire. Because so far, what it kind of seems like is a random series of incidences and episodes that are all sort of related to this bridge in Commerce City and sort of related to Miguel and Ray and Wiles and the drug trade. But we don't yet know how Alex fits into that. We don't yet know how Megan fits into all that. We don't know how Heather fits into all that. So it's all just kind of a big rambling mess of stuff. And it will tie in together later, but we're just asking the reader to keep a lot in mind, to remember a lot of stuff and keep a lot of stuff together. So simplicity is the key. Remember before I was talking about failing spectacularly. Well, I hope you can see now how spectacularly this is failing. And that's all I have to say about that. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Please rate and review us on iTunes. And go to jimheskett.com and sign up for my mailing list. You'll get free stuff. And who doesn't like free stuff? All right, everybody, now stay tuned for the freaking song. Well, that's it for this week's episode. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever else you found us. Check out the show at indieauthoranswers.com. Also, check out jimheskett.com and sign up for the email list to get notified of new episodes and freebie goodies. Like the Indie Author Answers Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at indieanswers. I appreciate you spending your time with me. Now go out there and write. Do it. Jim says so.